Good afternoon. This is Journeys with JP. It is the 19th today? Yeah, it's the 19th of February 2013, and my topic today is, yes, that's what it is. It's blank. I have no guest booked, but I do have an open phone line. And I do have Windows running on this. If anybody remembers last week's rather, let's call it a debacle. It was all over the place, because I just moved in and I didn't have all the right computers set up. But, this week I do have the computer set up, and I am able to bring people into the call without cutting them off or cutting off the radio or anything stupid like that. So. Now everything's correctly in order. I would like to Microsoft, yes. Don't worry about Microsoft, just call in with Skype, you know, just ignore all this stuff. You know, I think we just have to stop worrying about the Narkies and the reptilians and let them get on with their own battles between themselves. We as humans, we can who the heck is calling me at this time of day? All right, okay, so I'm going to have to dismiss that call. There we go. How did I do that? That's that. Shut up. Okay. Yes, we don't want that to happen. I hope they're not going to try and call me again. So, yes, I've got all my computers set up. So today I can call in with real readings, with real people. I mean, I can read real people who call in through the phone line and on – The Revolution Radio number is 347-688-2902. And apparently the Wolf Spirit Radio switchboard is also sent my way. So that's 775-657-5973. And here we have a call. It's a group call. 970, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
Who's that?
Name is Michael from Colorado.
Michael from Colorado. Jolly good. You might want to turn your speakers down a tiny bit because I can hear myself bouncing out, but not so bad. How are you today?
Wonderful, actually.
And that's good. And do you have a question? Do you know where I'm at?
Well, actually, I was just wondering if you were doing any of your Ray readings.
I am indeed. And so,
to the right place?
You have come to the right place, Michael. And what I need you to do, I need you to talk for about a minute while I tune in and get your numbers.
Certainly. What would you like me to just speak generally? Or?
Yes. Tell me about the weather. It doesn't really matter. I just need to tune into you. How's the weather in Colorado?
Ah, Colorado. Yes. I'm up here in the mountains, actually not too far from Estes Park up in the Rocky Mountain National Park area. And right now it's beautiful. It's one of those days in between, you know. It's right at that juncture of the changing that's going on, and it's just, I don't know, it's almost like you can see what's happening even in nature.
That's great. Okay, I got you. Okay, so Michael, you have... 2 second rays. We have second ray monad and second ray personality, which gives you a kind of a very gentle personality that is willing to help. Once you know you have a desire to be helpful, but it's very selfless, and it's not selfless in a martyrdom way. It's not like, oh, look at me, look how selfless I am. It's very quiet. It's on a very discreet level. Let's put it that way. You know, you help people without drawing attention to yourself that you're helping them. Basically you've got a large dose of the love ray. You may be even quite attractive to the opposite sex, or that you're very personable, you know, kind of, friendly and things like that. How am I doing?
I can give you a couple of little points that relate to that. I'm a Pisces with a with Pisces rising and Venus on the ascendant. So
it's funny, I was going to say Venus, very strong Venus energy. Because that, you know, that second rate. Yeah, so, yeah, good old Pisceans, yes, Piscean myself, so that's...
in the process, there was also one thing I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, I've heard you for, I don't know, probably 6 months, and, you know, this is actually the first time I was able to get to talk to you. It had to do with, and I don't want to interrupt your raid process here, but... that you have trouble remembering your dreams, and that's also been my case.
All right.
And I was just wondering at some point if you had any input on that, personally or any other way.
About remembering dreams. I'm not entirely sure, but I think the whole remembering dream thing for me is that there's parts of myself that I'm not allowed to look at yet. It's being very, that my ego would not enjoy it would make my ego unbearable or something like that. So I have to be very, I have to keep myself very grounded and very normal, and not think that I've got any magic past lives or any of that kind of stuff. So I just hear and I do ray readings, and I you know, answer people's phones and things like that. The only dreams that I remember are the really, really intense ones. And sometimes they're very, and those are very far between. So I'm not entirely sure how I could help you on that, because I haven't figured it out myself.
Well, you just by that, you actually, you know, there's parts that don't fall in place. It's always interesting. That's the reason I just ask questions, you know.
Mm.
Not necessarily looking for the answers.
Good. So, carrying on with your rays, your soul ray is the ray 7, which is the new collective. It's the new soul collective. For what we call the Aquarian Age. The previous collective was called the Piscean Age, and although you've got all this Piscean energy, it somehow allows the transition to happen. It's a bit like the bone or the gristle on the end of a bone that allows your joints to kind of slide across each other and not be full of friction. So part of the reason that we have so much second ray incarnated is to actually make this transition happen. Are you a therapist of some kind? I mean, because, all right, so here's the thing. With a seventh ray soul, and this is like, you know, vast numbers of the new children and everything being born, and many people from the last century as well, like yourself, have this seventh ray soul, which is... when we were growing up in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, that we have this this feeling that not everything's right, you know, the whole matrix, you know, there's a splinter in your mind, you can't really figure out what it is, and so you'll have seen the world and you've felt kind of not quite of it, because this is not how it should be, you know, and there's a sense that it's not quite right. And now we're finding that actually at that point we should have had more. We should have had flying cars and things like that because Tesla was bringing all that stuff in, but he was squashed. So you'll have found as you were growing up, you'd have been seeing this stuff and like, this is wrong. You know, why are we still using petrol? You know, gasoline. Why are we still using oil? You know, we should be floating around in the air and zipping from place to place in teleport machines. And now we find that actually all that technology was real, is real, but was real at that time as well. You know, it wasn't just in science fiction films. And that the science fiction films were more like historical documents. You know, like this film, The Galaxy Quest, you know. Have you seen Galaxy Quest?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
one of the funniest sci-fi, but they have a lot of truth in it, you know, a lot of truth. Particularly about these races who were able to build all this fantastic tech equipment, but they couldn't drive it. They didn't know how to drive it. So they had, you know, had to bring in this bunch of, has-been actors to actually drive the thing out. And my favorite part is when they're, coming out of the space dock. And, the guy doesn't know how to drive it, of course, and he just slams it into the side, and it's scraping painfully by. All these little alien bodies are spinning out into space, and, cause of his complete ineptitude, you know. Meanwhile, one of the things that they said is, when they came up to the guy, he said, "We've got all your, historical documents here," and they put the show on. And it's like, this is a fiction. And the guy, what's a fiction? Because they only tell the truth. They don't have things like fiction, you know. And this has actually been part of the, you know, we listen to a lot of contactees, that there is this kind of rather kind of, I mean, we have a good time here. This is, it might be a prison planet, but it's also a bit of a party planet, and we do interesting things. So back to the point was, that those historical documents, you know, unquote, like Star Trek and Stargate and all of those things, had an awful lot of reality. The time tunnel, for God's sake, the time tunnel, even, you know. And so we've got all of these technologies that are being suppressed at the moment. But well, you know, regular listeners to all of these shows on Revolution Radio, War Spirit Radio, we're talking about how these are going to be externalized, you know. So we are in very, very exciting times. And so where I'm getting to is that you probably watch Star Trek and Stargate and all those things, and in the back of your mind, you were kind of quite comfortable with it without being, you know, without that sort of great, you know, you kind of wished it was real, if you see what I mean, because it resonated with your recognition of what reality is. Does that make sense? It's like we're in a multiple lie game.
Yes. Well, yeah. Just a little aside too, that, like, tomorrow I'm going to be 70 years old, okay, so I've sort of seen this thing, you know, I participated in the 60s and all the riots and all the free speech movement in the 70s and the 80s. And it's like, this is the time I've been waiting for.
Yes.
You know, this is when it's all going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Popular Science magazine in the 50s was like, this is reality.
Mm.
And, you know, so... Please go on. I'm sorry.
But that's great. So yeah, you're 70. So you've seen this whole thing. So when you grew up, you were probably feeling really like a fish out of water. What is going on here? This isn't how it should be. You have all that.
It was always walking between the worlds because I was a total empath. So it took me a long time to be able to separate myself from other people, to realize that what was going on inside me wasn't necessarily always what was me, but it was what was present.
Mm. It was, I remember, you know, I was a kid in the 60s, you know, I'm just in my 50s, my mom was like, oh, you know, what's this rubbish and all this stuff. I was totally avid for it. It was like a thirst that couldn't be satisfied with any other kind of TV. And I don't know whether it was like the purity of color. One of the things that you really notice about Star Trek is that there's an awful lot of blue, of this lovely electric blue, radiant electric blue, and the colors that they used were very, very, very specific colors that gave you a particular feeling that you don't get on other TV shows. You know,
no.
Historical dramas are all drabs and browns right. And beiges and all that stuff. And so the color input I found was very nurturing and nourishing. I found the whole atmosphere was the way they didn't, you know, say, oh, you owe me $10, you know, give me $10. There wasn't any money, you know, they just had this replicator machine. Eventually that I want a cup of tea with Earl Grey, I want it hot now. And it usually worked. You know, there were times in the show when the thing went wrong and you know, you got a fish or something like that.
Peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah. Actually, I would have done, you know, the peanut butter's been good because, you know, some, apparently the replicators, real, as it were, they work according to your thoughts. So you have to be very specific about what you're thinking about. Otherwise you would end up with a peanut butter sandwich with a fish in a cup.
Yep.
Beautiful. So you'll have this, telepathic, you'll have this empathic, you'll have this, very gentle kind of persona. Like I say, you know, you'll be very personable. You have lots of friends. People will come to you. Appreciate you for your wisdom. All of your experience that you've, you know, you probably have had quite a lot of, all right. Okay, so tell me, when you were a kid, did you know exactly what you wanted to do when you grew up, or did you think, I don't know what I'm going to be doing?
Well, yeah, at the time, it was, science was, you know, sort of exploding at that point in time in the 50s, and, and so basically, you know, I went into science, and basically I, you know, got to the point of finishing a thesis, a PhD in biology, and I realized I had to walk out of there because it was total BS.
Mm.
It wasn't true, and I realized that if I actually got a PhD that my ticket would be punched, and I'd have to spend 20, 30 years in the middle of that before I could walk out again.
Mm.
Basically did CART for 20 years. Because it wasn't a matter of opinion, it was either, you know, plumb and square, or it wasn't.
Yeah.
And that was refreshing and enjoyable. So, at this point, it's after that.
So yeah, the ordering and the sculpting and the creation of physical plane matter through and did you come up with your own ideas? I would imagine that you would manifest your own thoughts and your own. You would make customized things for people?
I used to do kitchens and bathrooms, yes. That was according to their whims.
Yeah. And so people probably found you very, very able to communicate. I imagine people would say, well, this is the best time of, you know, this kitchen is the one that most suits me. That has, nobody else has ever been able to capture what I wanted, you know, that kind of thing. Did people say that to you?
It was, yes, and it was always, very often it's the ladies that, you know, it's like the men want a barbecue and the ladies want a kitchen.
Mm.
and so basically to have, you know, to be able to talk to be able to match the female energy with, you know, without becoming subservient.
In
other words, just to hold the space without, you know, either authority or anything else. That is, to me, was the way to communicate with whatever, whoever. And it just happened that these were people that I could help.
That's a really good point, Michael. That's one thing I want to expand on. This is what in the esoteric world we call right relationship. So that you're able to relate to a female without dominating, without flirting. You speak from your heart and you listen with your heart. And that would have been very much appreciated, particularly in 1960s America, or even, you know, even in any part of the 20th century, before there was the big, women's lib push,
yes.
That people would be still in that old mode of, you know, everybody's in their fixed roles, but you would be naturally, aligned to right relationship, which, you know, you people would find you very decent.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I can hear from your voice that you're a decent guy, you know, you'd be very honest and you have that, that sense of respect. And that's not normal. it's actually something that takes qualities that have been developed through multiple lifetimes of spiritual work, you know.
Well, it's like I get the sense, JP, that you're well aware. Also, I mean, if you don't, I mean, your word is really all that you do have. I mean, if your word isn't any good, you're basically cosmic roadkill.
Yes.
I mean, you know, because ultimately, I mean, outside of this condition, whatever you are can be seen completely. I mean, you can't hide.
So, when we're, yes, I just think about, things, do you engage in any creative work? Are you, like, quietly, do you carve wood? Are you a sculptor of any kind? Because 7-3 people have, there's certain kind of classes of things. One is law, you know, one is rhythm, drumming, things like that. Another is magical work, you know, like grid work and all of those things. When we call magical, you know, the unseen worlds, and forces. Do you have any of those, avenues?
That was, well, the last one, basically. Back in the early 80s, I spent, about 3 years at the Berkeley Psychic Institute as a trance channel and as a reader and understanding that whole thing, because prior to that point it had reached the condition where I was just about ready for the funny farm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had to be able to move my body and be grounded and everything else that in order to function.
Yeah.
So, and at that, you know, working at that place, you have to be able to function. You have to be in your body, you have to be in present time, and you have to be in the middle of your head, you know.
Mm.
At least that's the easiest place to do it from. The heart, however, is obviously the place that, I mean, that's home, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that you know this.
Yeah. Well, they like your phrase cosmic roadkill. That's great. Just watching the chat room. Yeah, the heart is the center of the body. It's the center of the being. And as we know, you know, it expands and contracts with a magnetic fluid inside. So it's actually creating a magnetic pulsing field around you. That's what, you know, everybody recognizes, and you can feel other people's when you come close to them. You know, it's like your energies, and you'll definitely be keenly aware of that. So yes, so like I say, you know, you've got the trance medium, kind of thing. What that'll also mean is the higher form of telepathy, which is not about actually, you know, like head to head communication with words and things like that, but just finding yourself in the right place at the right time to say the right thing to the right person. That's telepathy, you know, because you're taking part in the group process, of the world. And, you know, it's not a personal thing, a soulful thing. And your soul will be easily kind of driven around, or rather your being, your body is very in tune with the soul world. And so what you can do is, you know, you are a vehicle for the soul and the soul collective.
Thank you. Yes. It's well, it was, the interesting part was that, at, you know, after 3 or 4 years of that thing, of doing it the way that the Institute did it, I pretty much had to leave, because it's almost like, you know, you're sort of being used as a milk cow in a certain way. And I began to find that, you know, that I literally had to be in my heart and read from my head, and that was not something which was particularly fostered at the Institute. So I basically had to leave it.
And when you left it, did you start your own thing?
I really sort of left and, you know, went back into the material world of carpentry, of craftsmanship, of all that whole thing, just to, you know, get back in my body again on a different level. And then in the 90s, I became involved again with a spiritual group, and ended up, in a situation up in a small town in Idaho, and, you know, learned that whole scenario of being in small spiritual groups that can become very interesting.
The things can get a bit intense, can't they?
Can't they, yes. But the one thing that the Institute taught me that was invaluable was not to lose your amusement about any of it, you know. That, you know, if you can find the humor and the amusement in everything, that basically it just tends to flow. You tend to be through it rather than running up against it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, you've been through these periods of learning, and then you've realized that, you know, you've learned what you had, and you don't need the support or the backing or the authority of these other people.
Yeah.
And so it may well be that you could restart doing your thing, but on your own, as somebody who's had a lot of experience now.
Yes.
So maybe you could get yourself a radio show. I'm not joking.
No, I'll just call it the years, JP.
Well, maybe you could come on as a guest, you know, and talk about your stuff, because what would have happened is that you'd have come through with something new. You take what you've been given, you know, you take your PhD work, you take your institute work, and you take the other group's work, and all of those are combined in your heart, and you know what's dross. You know, and you know what's good stuff. And you've probably now developed a technique all of your own, even if you've just been making shelves. Every person that you've been coming into contact with, you've done a healing on, unknowingly.
It seems to me you were either going to hurt somebody or heal them. And I guess I look at healing as, I mean, basically, it seems that all healing is really self-healing, so that really the only thing I can do is try and help and put you back in communication with your own beingness. And then you'll do the healing. You know exactly what to do.
That's right.
You know.
That's right. Everybody knows exactly what to do and doesn't, you know, you don't really need a healer. You just need somebody to stop you from hurting yourself. Because you believe.
And I'll reestablish that spirit being communication, yes.
Yes. Yes. So that's marvelous. That's marvelous. So, you have any questions, Michael?
Oh, it, Not really. It's just I so enjoy sharing the heart space with you. It's because it's like you feel very comfortable there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just very grateful for that. And I mean, see, 10 years ago, this was not on the internet.
No, I was looking for it.
I was too.
And you know that's how I approached this whole thing. I was looking for somebody to teach me more about the rays. I discovered that everybody didn't know anything about the rays, and I'm thinking, my God, we need this. This is like, you know, were you listening to Siobhan's show the other day, Humanity Transcending?
I didn't catch it.
I want to put a plug in. If anybody can get to the archives on YouTube, on the Revolution, I can't remember the name of the. Can somebody put the channel name in the chat room? I'm sorry, but basically, she was reading from the esoteric books, very similar to the books that the rays are pictured in. And what she was saying is that this is the information that the elites know. This is the secret societies. This is what the secrets are of the secret societies. It's not actually about manipulating and controlling the world. That's a kind of piggyback thing that doesn't really mean, it's nothing to do with why they were set up in the first place. They were set up in the first place to keep the secrets. Not to keep them secret, but to keep the secrets, like you keep a car in good condition, to maintain things like a library, for it to come out. Now, we need to have this information. This information was put out over 100 years ago, but nobody took any notice of it, and nobody could read it, and it was all in a difficult language, and because of the mindset that we've been inculcated with, you know, people thought, oh, it's spiritual, well, that's got to be religion. All of those lines that are now being broken down, and people are now starting to understand, yes, you can believe in God, but you don't have to believe in Muhammad or Jesus or Moses, or, you know, you don't have to be told what to believe. You can believe things for yourself, and in fact, you can find things out and know. And that's very much a quality of the seventh ray, is that you don't want to believe anything. You need to know it, don't you?
I look at everything, I believe nothing.
Yeah. That's it.
I mean, to me, belief is like, I'm getting off the bus here. Thank you very much. It was a nice ride, but goodbye.
You know, the point about the humor, and God, right? And one of our listeners in Wolf Chat is saying, you know, been saying for years that God has quite a good sense of humor at her expense. And I think that, you know, a lot of us feel this, you know, it's like, you are joking, aren't you? Yeah, and you feel like Truman, you know, in the Truman Show, you know, looking there, you know, and perhaps that there's more reality than that. Perhaps we are actors in some soap opera, you know. And
we're all doing a George Carlin, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're all comedians, we're all entertainers.
Yeah.
They say that you watch a movie when you're at the end of your life. You're shown a movie of your life from other people's perspective, and the best thing is to make that movie a good movie. And I'm sure mine will be a sci-fi comedy. You know, at some point. It'll all make sense because, in my own personal experience, those things that I kind of had a sort of interest in, my hobbies, have now become my career. So that's, and you know, that's taken 50 years to assemble all those different parts. And it's just, I love this story by Steve Jobs, the Apple guy, who fell in and out of college courses. And he kept on getting expelled, or he got bored, or this or that. And when he got bored, he would just wander around the campus, and he came across a calligraphy class. And he said, oh, let's take a calligraphy class. And without knowledge of kerning and fonts and leading and all those technical details of how to composite, we wouldn't have had the Apple Mac doing what the Apple Mac can do these days.
Right.
And it was all because he felt he was a failure.
Right.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And so, you know, having this secondary energy, is a similar thing. You know, you don't really always know what you want to be. You don't have that drive. You don't think, oh, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be this. It's like, what have I got in front of me? How do I deal with the world? How can I accommodate? How can I feel more comfortable? What can I do to make myself feel more comfortable? Because, you know, you'd necessarily have felt a great discomfort at this world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, after doing carpentry for 20 years, you know, it was like this was during the time when computers were, you know, the Z80 was just out as a processor and everything. So I went back to computer school and learned computers, and then, you know, went to work for Beckman Instruments and did you know, Genentech and all of the high-end computer instruments for about 2 years, and, you know, until I realized what the insanity that is. But in understanding that, you learn enough about computers so that I could, you know, I decided to learn AutoCAD, so I do drafting now for architects and engineers. You know, so there's always one can do, and I know that you're of that same nature. I just get that from you.
Yeah, well, I've always had this thing in the back of my mind. Oh, I can do that. I can do that. Done that.
Right.
But I, you know, I've never done it. But I felt if there was a reason to do it, and it's usually a reason to serve somebody. To find out, to help somebody, because, right. You know, I'm happy with doing the things that I do. You know, I don't need to sort of go into a big adventures to find creativity. I've got plenty of that to spare. So it's only when somebody needs something from me that I find out that I can do it. You know,
right.
And this is the process. This is what I call the process of soul expression, and that's what happens. Is you get the your soul calls another person, another part of the one, to into your life, and you become part of a circular process. They want something from you, and your soul has brought them. In order for that part of you to become activated. And like I said, you know, you probably don't even need to put your name up in a shop newspaper or shop window. That's what we do in Britain to advertise ourselves. I don't know what happens in America, but the idea is, you know, you don't have to print up business cards or anything, or publicize yourself, because people will be drawn to you because your soul will bring them to you. And your soul doesn't care about newspapers. It's got direct telepathic communication. It uses, like, you know, I'll be here at the 10 o'clock in the morning. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll bump into you, you know, kind of thing.
Yes. Well, you know, something recently that's sort of come up, too, is that, you know, there's sort of been this division that has been talked about of, you know, service to self versus service to others.
Mm.
And it's just seeming to me that, I mean, service to others is really service to self, because, I mean, there isn't anything else.
That's right. There's a lovely concept from Babylon 5 called enlightened self-interest.
Ah,
well. Which is an embodiment of what you just said.
Great.
Because, yeah, we're all one, and if we are one, then what I do to you, I do to myself. So if I help you, I help myself. If I harm you, I harm myself. And that's, you know, many traditional belief systems around the world, and from what I say, you know, around the galaxy, that is the same attitude. It's the idea that you know, whatever you do, will affect you in some way. And that's how Ho'oponopono works as well. This, Hawaiian healing method is because we're all one. If I forgive you, then I forgive myself, kind of thing.
Yes, the Ho'oponopono, that's a beautiful, very beautiful thing to me, yes.
I find it very, very effective. You know, it's miraculous.
It's absolutely. It's the one magic, arrow in my quiver.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, it can't fail. Because it's like, you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's within you.
Yeah. It's love in action.
Yes.
I had a friend last year who had such a profound experience with it, and it was just, she had a situation with her ex-husband who was very proud and never apologized, and you know, was always, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so she was reflecting the same thing, and there was this big kind of antagonism but it's completely imaginary. But they built that up. And, so I said, you know, repeat after me. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. You know, I am not joking. That was like, it felt like somebody had put a pin in a huge balloon or a huge, not a balloon because it didn't go bang. It just, and 5 minutes later, not even 5 minutes later, she gets a call from this man who had never apologized in 20 years. Never apologized in 20 years. And he calls up, sends a text message. Sorry, I've been such an asshole last night. Please, can we start this and make this work again? That's how profound Ho'oponopono is in my experience. Have you had something like that?
Any time that I get in that mindset of where, you know, I'm running some kind of a continuous mental loop, it's those, you know, those four phrases just absolutely brings everything back to the heart. You can't help, I mean, you know, the pictures that come up when you say, I mean, after someone has, you know, thrown up on you, and, you know, you're standing there and they basically were telling you how badly they hurt. You know, and then the pictures that come up in your own self when you say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And to me, that's true magic. That's white magic. You know,
true magic.
White magic is no magic. You know, there's no incantations, preparations and meditations. It's just being. Really, that's the whole essence of harmlessness is embodied in that. That's beautiful. Yeah. So, how's Colorado? How far are you from all this stuff that's been going on recently in Colorado?
Oh, the fires and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, the fires. Oh, you've gone loud. Good. The fires and the shootings and all of this false flag stuff.
Well, it's down a little bit south from where I am, but it's all basically just to create fear. But it's not working.
That's right.
I'm not afraid.
That's right. And this is really the, you know, I see this whole thing, you know, I see the gun debate. Do we need guns? Actually, it's not guns or people that kill people. It's fear that kills people. It's fear that makes you want to carry a stick or a knife or a weapon or it doesn't matter what the weapon in your hand is. If you're being driven by fear, then it's, you know, someone's going to get hurt because we're all one. That creates it.
Yes. So true. It's in England. Weapons over there, of course, are something which, I mean, you can't even really have a sharpened. True.
Have a what?
A sharpened pencil.
A sharpened pencil. Well, actually, where I live is, I'm right in the middle of the country, near the northern coast of Scotland, and it's a second world country. It's not a first world. It's we have lairds, you know, landlords, and they have hunting and shooting and fishing and things like that. So the first thing that I noticed when I came up to Scotland, is the number of dead things that are lying around, you know, the number of dead critters on the road, you get these gamekeepers and there's the whole, you know, stack of pheasants that have just, you know, they've been shot and nobody's eaten them. They're just rotting there. So there's lots of, there's a lot closer to death. I think that, you know, the first world, second world, third world, it's like, the lower the number, the less exposure you have to death. It's unpleasantness and all of that stuff. Although, you know, there are some places in America that you won't want to go at night because it's likely that, you know, that you will die. So I hear. I haven't been there. I've only been to Utah in the States, which is a rather, it was just fantastic to see, the flats and the big wide land. That was such an amazing, experience. Yeah.
You were over in the US not too long back?
About, 14 years ago. Yeah. Just after Princess Diana was killed. So, good. So, yes, I'm just having a quick look through the chat room. Yeah, Blonde, you're just going to have to call me on my line. Go to my website. Oh, yeah, if anybody would like a personal private reading where I can really go into some stuff that, you know, you don't want to talk about in public, if you go to everbeyond.info and click the reading button, then you can connect with me and you see the pricing and things like that. Most people who have a reading, they don't come back for a long time because there's a lot of information there that can really get people going on their path. Those are the thing that I'm most interested in is to help people get on their path and, well, actually realize that they're on a path because we're on a path anyway. But to highlight where the path is for them in terms of how their heart expression goes. And then I can do private readings, and also for people certainly in the UK, I sell Organite, which is area cleansing devices, passive devices that clean the energy out of areas. They're made of crystals and organ accumulators. I also make these crystal pendants, which I can send across the pond easily, which contain a crystal which is tuned into your soul energy, and it's then activated so that it radiates that energy. So basically you walk around with this thing and it kind of creates a kind of bubble around you that is like you-ness. So it's not like a protective field, but it's more like a kind of big etheric skin around you, and helps you get, unless you really go hell-bent for leather to try and get possessed by people's thoughts and energies. It's particularly appropriate for empaths because you walk into a room and suddenly you've got 50 auras impinging on your aura, and it gives that extra boost to kind of push your, it's like a fountain, you know, you can throw a ball at a fountain, but the ball will be thrown back because the fountain is pushing out all the time. And that's essentially the way these things work. So it's not like a protective shield, in the same way as, you know, it stops things bouncing up, you know, things hitting you, but it's like a fountain, really, kind of thing. I'm sure you've got an affinity with crystals.
Yes, very much so.
And you talk to them, don't you?
Oh, yes.
And they talk back, don't they?
Oh, yes. Not necessarily always maybe what I want to hear, but yes.
Yeah, well, that's the best bit. I love it when they tell you what you don't want to hear. That's because that to me, that's proving, you know, that they're legit, you know, they're not just being, you know, some sort of sycophantic spirit behind it. It's like, right, okay, you want some reality? You want honesty? You can't handle the truth. But
well, it was sort of interesting because I live up here on it's basically like a quartz, almost a mountain. It's just riddled with quartz. And in order to put the structure here, I had to blast out some rock. And it was, after that occurred, it had opened up an etheric chamber in which there was some in it, and basically that, you know, through a process of really land clearing, it had to be more or less sort of brought into compatibility, so that it, in other words, I wasn't trying to destroy its domain, I was just asking to share it.
All right, so you got in, that was an opportunity for you to get into contact with the consciousness of the rock that you were going to share your space with. Interesting.
Yes.
And so you learned how to heal that and to help it to reconnect to its own. It's like, you know, he blew some of the wires out.
Yes. I disturbed its den.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes.
But it's all it. You know, the thing that I continually find is that if I bring it into the heart and look at it from that place, that the answer will always be there.
Excellent. Because, you know, that's connected with the earth and the earth mind. And so, in a way, what you've almost like you created a socket, in the earth's wiring pattern that you can plug into, that your house is like a control panel there. That's interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, that's it.
That is it. Wow. everbeyond.info. Is my website info. I'm just going to post that in the chat room now. The readings are private, and I send you a recording, and everything's great. Michael, thank you very much for calling in. It's been a beautiful experience. Thank you.
JP, thank you so much. You be well.